Quiet, please. Radio. Welcome to Rex Sykes Movie Beat, conversations with filmmakers where we discuss everything film and television. I'm your host, Rex Sykes. The chat room is open and we are good to go. First, I want to thank all of my listeners and the readers of my blog for tuning in, for listening, and for supporting Rex Sykes Movie Beat. You know, here on Movie Beat, you're going to learn what to do and what not to do when it comes to making movies and TV. We will talk to everyone behind the scenes and in front of the camera, and I'll provide you with guests and information you're going to want to have, whether you're a filmmaker or a fan. So now we're going to move right behind the scenes with Movie Beat. You can join or subscribe, rather, to the official website, which is rexsikes.com. That's my name. It's rexsikes.com. And right there at the welcome page, you can subscribe to the website. That way you're always going to be updated to changes in the blogs and articles, the cast and crew listings, upcoming events, and these interviews. And keep in mind that there are over 110 fabulous interviews right there on the website at the interview site. You go there, you scroll through, look at the names and the subject headers, and then you click on any one of the people that you want to listen to. And inside that biography article is a link that says to listen live. If you're listening live, if it says upcoming, it hasn't occurred yet. Otherwise, it'll say to listen, and you'll listen to an archived show. If you are listening to this live, go ahead. You can rate it. You can friend us right there where you are, and we appreciate that. That helps spread the word. If you're listening to this archived, as I said, keep in mind that there are other great interviews you're going to want to go back and listen to. Now, the other good news is that you can subscribe to Rex Sykes Movie Beat through iTunes at the iTunes Store. It's free. It's a podcast. You get all of the interviews, and you get each one updated to your electronic device as they become available, and that's just about every day now. So I want to thank everybody who tweets us. Our Twitter address is Rex Sykes Movie BT. That's Rex Sykes Movie BT. The last word is abbreviated. Please do follow us, and please do retweet about my guests when they're coming on. And after they've been on, because it helps others find out about the show and benefit from my guest expertise. When you Facebook us, put us on your wall. When you email your friends or do MySpace or your favorite social media means, again, it supports us. It supports my guests. And my guests are great because what they're doing is they're sharing their expertise with all of us so that we can make our projects easier, faster, cheaper in some cases, whatever it might be. So I really appreciate when you support them. And I have a few coming up announcements. Our guest today is Mr. Rocky Lang. He is a producer. He's an author. He's a director. He's done a lot of different things, and you're going to surely want to hear about him, and we'll be bringing him on the show in just a second. But I got to tell you what's coming up, what's going on right now. If you go to the Hot and Fun blog at RexSykes.com, at the Rex Sykes Movie Beat site, V-Pipe Screenplay Pitch Contest by way of Facebook. There's information there. Julie Richardson, producer, has been on the show. Had talked about this contest. You want to go there, check it out, read about it. The 2010 Great Lakes Film Fest has a call for festival entries. Go check that out if you've got a film that you want to enter. Coming up almost immediately is the Northern California Screenwriter and Filmmakers Expo, March 26th through the 28th in Napa, California. You can find out about that. Later on in the summertime is Kevin Sorbo's Celebrity Golf Tournament. It's a World Fit for Kids. It's a charity. It's June 10th through the 11th. In Las Vegas. So if you golf, if you care about kids, if you like Las Vegas or any of those appeal to you, be sure to check that out. Kevin will be back on the show sometime soon. In April, I'll do this first, Wisconsin Film Festival 2010 will be Wednesday, April 14th to Sunday, April 18th. You can learn more about that at their website. We do have a link on Rex Sykes Movie Beat in the resource pages, I believe, but the web address is 2010.wifilmfest.org. That's 2010.wisconsin, abbreviated, filmfest.org. So go find out about that. Director Mike Baskorf has been a guest. His movie, Feed the Fish, will be showing Friday, 16th of April at 10:15 in Madison, Wisconsin. That's where the fest is held. Also, Baraboo, an offering by Mary Sweeney, is going to be there. No Names will be there. Other films made and produced in the state of Wisconsin. Many of them have a Hollywood connection, but they were produced right here. I've got great upcoming guests. We'll tell you about them at the break, but now I want to introduce you to Mr. Rocky Lang. He's been involved in the motion picture and television business all of his life, and he recently produced a movie, Racing for Time, for Lifetime Television, starring Charles Dutton, which received a Best Picture nomination for the Image Awards. And he grew up the son of veteran producer and Universal Studios executive Jennings Lang, who produced Earthquake, Play Misty for Me, among others. And Rocky knew what he wanted to do early on was to write, produce, and direct, and he set himself on that track. To do that, he produced and directed 5 documentary films, including the award-winning The Making of Tootsie. He had assignments directing long-running hit TV shows like Remington Steele, and he's directed 3 feature films, Nervous Ticks, Race for Glory, and All's Fair. He produced Ridley Scott's, directed the feature film White Squall, and he has and also produced the Emmy Award-winning Titanic, a 4-hour miniseries for CBS. He's written 4 books, and he's going to talk about one of those today, as well as some of his upcoming projects, and we're going to talk about producing and about his business of connecting people up inside the industry. Rocky, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, it's good to have you here this morning. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. So, Rocky, let's just start off with what's going on? What'd you do this weekend? What's happening?
It's a crazy weekend. But I had a blast this weekend. My daughter, Nikki Lang, who's 18, who is a singer and songwriter. She's been at the Monterey Jazz Festival and has a CD out, and she's an amazing kid who also just got into UCLA last week, which we were really excited about.
Congratulations.
Although she'd rather tour. Apparently they had 57,000 applicants, the largest in the country this year, so I'm very proud of her. But we did her first music video that was directed by filmmaker Todd Robinson, who did Lonely Hearts last year, which he directed with John Travolta and James Gandolfini, Salma Hayek. And it was just a tremendous pleasure for me to sort of sit back and see my best friend directing my daughter in her music video. And she's up at www.nikkilang.com. Got to plug my kid.
Yeah.
And, so that was the weekend. It was an amazing, amazing shoot. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Fantastic.
So that was on the weekend. And then everything else has just been really busy in work. Some reality shows. Got a project going at Lifetime. And we can get into all of those as we move through the show.
Okay. All right. Now, you've also had deals as producers and writers with Warner Brothers and Universal and New World and CBS, NBC, ABC, 20th Century. I mean, the list goes on. So you're
right.
A busy man. You're a busy man.
Yeah.
And you've won awards with screenplays and writing screenplays. Well, I guess I should ask, what do you like best? You know, writing, directing, producing?
I think that it really, some of that has to do with the time of life. As a kid, I was very directed from a very early age to be a director. I was very fortunate. I grew up in a Hollywood family. My dad was a producer, and I sort of grew up in the back lot of Universal and the likes of Steven Spielberg, when before he was Steven Spielberg, would be over at my house when he was just on the lot at Universal doing television. And my dad had given him his first feature on Sugarland Express. And so I sort of idolized Steven and some of the other directors that when I was very young and wanted to do that. And that's sort of where I set my goal. And for a large part of my life, directing was where it was. And that sort of changed ultimately when I had children and I didn't want to be on location as much. And that sort of transitioned more into producing and writing. But so when you ask me what I liked the most, I love the creative process. I loved being on location as a young man, traveling through Europe, making movies and doing all of that. And at this point, what I really love doing is I love writing. And the most fulfilling experience I've ever had in sort of the art was in the writing of my first novel, The Big Nasty, which is just out right now. And I think that the reason why that is the most enjoyable for me is that screenplays are restrictive to form. It's very craft-oriented, and you're having to basically show the story rather than tell the story. So there was a great liberation in writing a novel where exposition became something that was allowed, and to be able to go into backstory and subtext and sort of, you know, create worlds and images that you couldn't really do in a screenplay form. So at this point, the novel writing is the most enjoyable, but it depends on the project. It's a little long-winded answer.
No. It's a great answer. And is there a website? Where can people find out more about the Big Nasty?
The Big Nasty can be, RockyLang.com, which is www.rockylang.com, has a lot of information about it. There's also a sizzle reel, which we can get into because my company, BooksToFilm.tv, does sizzle reel. So we have a sizzle reel for that, which we can talk about. But also, the book is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of the sort of those areas. It just came out last week, and I'm extremely excited. We got an amazing first review, and some of the great filmmakers like David Frankel gave me a tremendous blurb. David directed Devil Wears Prada and Marley and Me. And Brenda Strong from Desperate Housewives also gave us a tremendous blurb because it's got a little bit of a Desperate Housewives sort of flavor to it.
Well, if you don't mind, I'm looking at the dust jacket right now, and I can actually read what some of these people said. Mixing equal parts, Elmore Leonard, Desperate Housewives, Carl Heisen and Heisen, A Legally Blonde. Rocky Lane has concocted a wholly original and hilarious cocktail of sex and politics that goes down smoothly and leaves you gasping with pleasure. Hollywood and Washington have never been worshipped so fervently or dissected so viciously. If there's any justice in this world, this will soon be a major motion picture, and that's from David Frankel. So awesome. That's very, very good. Very cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I paid him a lot of money for that one.
So, I'm sure you did. No, I know you did. But that's very good. That's great.
So it was fun, and that project sort of an interesting journey because I originally had written it as a screenplay, mm-hmm. and tried to sell it as a screenplay unsuccessfully, and it sort of stayed with me for a long time. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to I always wanted to write a novel. It was sort of on my bucket list. And so what I did is I just started to write it as a novel, and I used the screenplay as sort of the roadmap for the novel. So the novel came out very easily because essentially my beginning, middle, and end had already been written, and I knew where the story was going. So it became sort of almost free in a way to write. And in the methodology of writing, I mean, I'm a big believer in method. However you use it, whether or not you're coming from the Neighborhood Playhouse or Stanislavski or Strasberger or Sandy Meisner or any of the great acting teachers that teach method acting, or whether or not you use a method in your writing or a method in your directing, I think that ultimately, you know, the best work is dissection of character. And so for me, by writing the script, it was almost all the sort of the pre-work, the prep work that I needed to do as a writer in order to write a successful novel. And I think that if I hadn't done the screenplay, my novel would never have been as good as it is, because I hadn't done all of the pre-work. And just like when you write a screenplay, you know, I advocate that writers basically write character bios so they understand their characters when they start to write their screenplays. And when, you know, you work with an actor on a set, you try to the good, well-trained actors sort of back themselves out of the day of the scene and sort of think about, like, well, what did I do last night and what was my morning like? And they take themselves right up to the scene, so they actually are, you know, in those moments. So it, for me, it was a tremendously successful experience, and I'm not someone who toots my own horn at all, but I love my book. I love it, and I love my characters, and I'm super excited about it. And if it doesn't sell, you know, 5 copies, it was a success for me.
Wow, that's a good attitude. I mean, it really is. I mean,
yeah.
Because you enjoy the press. That did, and let's revisit this a second. Since it was a screenplay, did you, I don't want to say simply, but you flesh out the screenplay, or
No, it didn't.
Did you rewrite? I mean, you know, recreate it in novel. You know, if you understand.
No, it was recreated. It was a roadmap for me. It's like, you know, if you were going to do a step outline on, you know, on a movie,
right.
you know, you basically line up, you know, point by point which way the movie's going to go. And the script really was a template for that. I mean, I never really went back to the script. It's just I knew it already because I had written it. And the novel is much, you know, more complex and deeper, and there are things that you can do in the novel you can't do in a screenplay, you know, for example, the exposition parts of a novel which can't be in a screenplay.
Well, let me ask this about the writing process, because I mean, you're a person who grew up, you know, as you said, on the back lots of the studios, surrounded by people, and you've directed, you've produced, you've been surrounded by people, the crews and cast and all this stuff, and writing tends to be a fairly solitary adventure.
Right. Well, I am a people person, and I love activity around me, and there is nothing like working with film crews. You become instant family. It is a lot of fun. It's probably why I enjoyed the video shoot so much of Nikki last night or this weekend. I was back on the set, and it was wonderful. But there's also adjustments you make in your life for certain reasons. And for me, I try to look at, you know, the positives of all of them. The solitary work of a writer is a lonely job, and I think that when you fall in love with your characters, which I did in The Big Nasty, it helps it a lot because you love them. But you know, my sacrifice was different. The mother of my children, when she left the marriage and she wound up moving out of town for several years, and I had young children to raise myself. My choice was that I wanted to be a present father, and I wanted to make sure that my children were taken care of by a parent in the house. So that part of the decision to become a writer was forced upon me by circumstances. And so while I missed the activity of production, it was more than made up by the fact that I got to see my children grow up, and I fell in love with writing. So in the end, I had the benefit of seeing my children grow up and see them every day, and I also had the benefit of becoming a pretty good writer and finding joy out of it. And the trade-off was that I didn't get to be around as many people who were making movies. I just got to be around a lot more soccer moms as I was taking care of my children. So it's a trade-off.
No, that's awesome. I'm actually in pretty much the same boat as you are, and the trade-off is definitely worth it. Apart from the soccer moms, but being able to spend time with your children, my children, you know, is what makes it all absolutely worthwhile. So right. I appreciate that, and I certainly understand it. And I wish you the best of success with The Big Nasty. I do. I think that's fantastic, and I look forward to reading it myself. So, and I encourage other people to as well.
And
but
check out
also,
that sizzle reel. That sizzle reel was fun to do.
Well, let's talk about that. Where can they find that? At RockyLang.com?
It's up at RockyLang.com, or it's actually up on the publisher's site, CablePublishing.com. It was really cool to do because about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was approached by the Independent Book Publishers Association to create a curriculum that would help authors and publishers bring their movies ideas or their book ideas to Hollywood, and which is pretty hard to do. But what I did is I started to think about the curriculum to sort of teach and provide to publishers and authors. And while I was doing it, I realized that really what this was about is synthesizing the idea of your project into a pitchable form, which is what we do. And part of that, those have to do with, you know, log lines, treatment, synopsis, and what we call in the business sizzle reels, which other people know maybe as book trailers, although my sizzle reels are designed slightly different than book trailers. And the distinction is where a trailer is basically to get somebody to read the book. The sizzle reel is what I try to do is to help authors to be able to sell their books or attract agents, publishers, producers, and so forth and so on, both in the movie business, in the television business, radio, internet, new media, and print. And so what we do is, in creating this curriculum, I decided to start this company, which was called BooksToFilm.tv. And what we do is along with helping writers distill their ideas into pitchable forms, both with text and verbally, we offer the option of creating these sizzle reels. And what sizzle reels are 1 minute to 1.5, 2 minutes visual depictions of the ideas that can be put into emails, on websites, they can be sent out. So if you are, let's say you, if we want to talk about the Hollywood side and you have a screenplay idea and you are unrepresented and you want to get an agent, then what we can do is we can make a sizzle reel on your screenplay and then you can send a Paradigm or Endeavor, William Morris Endeavor or CIA or whatever to agents, and in a flash and an email, they'll get an idea of what your screenplay is and they'll go, wow, this is interesting, as opposed to you just sending your screenplay in unrepresented to somebody hoping they're going to read it with the billions of other people who are sending in their screenplays. Well, we primarily do this also for authors who are trying to either get to publishers or they're trying to get to agents, or they're successful authors trying to get to Hollywood. We do them for agents who are trying to hook up, literary agents who are trying to hook up with Hollywood producers. And it's used in various forms. It's also used in the self-help market because people are trying to get onto radio and to television and ultimately get onto Oprah. And if you go through traditional channels of the old way where you get a publicist and you send your manuscript in and it goes to a producer and there's, a million other people sending their manuscripts in looking for FaceTime, and it just winds up on the floor. But if you're able to email the sizzle reel to the producer of Oprah or to Rex, who wants to get on Rex's show, and you click your email and boom, you see the sizzle reel, you go, wow, this gal really has a good story to tell. I want that person on my show. You've now leapfrogged, the traditional way of marketing material. So books2film.tv, we do that. We provide that service. And I found that to be very rewarding. I have a young partner in this company, a guy named Scott Barker, who is an amazing talent. He's only 21 years old. And I found him in the Apple store, actually, as I went in trying to learn how to use some of the iMovies and Final Cut and all of that. And he was so great, and I started having him do my sizzle reels for my movies. And, in fact, we sold my recent Lifetime movie based on a sizzle reel that Scott cut for me, which I'll tell you about in a second. But just staying along on the sizzle reel. So Scott has been coming along with me, and we've done a number of these. And Scott just directed his first feature for me, which I produced, called Spinners. And you guys can check that out at www.spinnersfilm.com. And we should have that film ready for to take out to market in about 2 months. And it's just a tremendously fun project on sign spinners, basically. And I don't know where your audience is, but here in Los Angeles and in Las Vegas and in Miami, there's a company called Arrow Ads. And you might drive by and you see these guys spinning signs on the corner. And so Scott found these guys, and it's become a sport, and it winds up being a national competition. And these guys are like break dancers. I mean, and they come from, they're insane how incredible they are with this damn sign. And so it's a sort of a slice of life. It's very urban. And the company that started this, so there are these two young guys, and essentially it becomes a place where kids, young people who are maybe sort of disadvantaged or struggling and they need a job, they not only wind up spinning these signs as sort of guerrilla advertising for this company, but the company itself actually gives opportunities for these kids to become district managers and they sort of rise up through the corporate ranks. So our film, Spinners, is really it's a really fun, sort of almost like a dance movie, but it has a social commentary to it, and Scott directed this. And Scott's my partner in Books to Film. So it's all sort of like morphed in all these different ways. It's very cool.
Wow, that is cool. Now, just to provide a visual to the listeners, how are they spinning signs? I mean, how does that?
Well, they're arrows. These signs are arrows, and it's almost like it's so hard for me to explain. It's not just spinning up and down. I mean, these guys like stand on one arm and they flip them up in the air and they catch them behind their back and they do back flips and front flips and they do them on skateboards and they compete. So like the sign spinners of Los Angeles, you know, they work. I mean, it's not, they work at this job, but then they all come to these competitions. So the guys who are out in New Jersey at 20 below temperature in the snow, you know, they have sort of like, almost like the NBA, the East Coast teams, the Detroit Pistons and the Knicks, you know, they have a different sort of swagger than the Lakers have out here on the West. And so their idea of sign spinning is a little different. And then when they meet down in Florida, and they have this competition, you know, it is just cool. It is just wild how they come from all over. And now the company has actually gone overseas into Europe, so there's some like Korean spinners who come in and all of that. And I mean, I can't do justice to the description of the art of sign spinning unless you go up and look at it online. So it's very cool. Very, very cool.
Very cool. Well, I want to say that while you've been talking, I, with the sound down, have had the Big Nasty Sizzle Reel viewable in the back. And it's good. It's nice. And your spokesperson, boy, can she wink.
She's a winker. That's Brooke Lyons, and she's a wonderful actress here in Los Angeles. And I got my friend Peter Crabb to do the voiceover narration, and Peter toured with Eric Idle on the Greedy Bastard tour, and Peter's a writer. He wrote a lot of stuff for the Monty Python folks, and he's a wonderful guy. And we have a screenplay out called Winter Formal right now, which we wrote together, which we're trying to get made. We're excited about that, and Peter's a wonderful guy.
So books to film, if you produce these, or you would produce these for projects, you know, I mean, you know, in other words, people can. How do they get a hold of you in that regard?
Well, they can go up to, you know, bookstofilm.tv, or they can actually just email me at rocky@bookstofilm.tv.
Okay.
We evaluate the projects, and again, they don't have to be books. They can be screenplays, or they can be speakers. We do speaker sizzles. We do stuff for nonfiction people. We do all sorts of things. We just did an amazing project for a guy who, believe it or not, has the last narrative masterpiece of Orson Welles. And he came to us with a project that Orson Welles had narrated, you know, right before his death, on a journey that this man made, from a walking journey from Alaska to Mexico. And he had photographed this experience. This is 20 years ago, and he decided after all these years he was going to, you know, turn it into a movie. So we did a sizzle reel for him.
Oh, fantastic. Rocky, I got more questions. We're going to come back, and we'll talk about the project that you just sold and other things as well.
Great.
I got to take a little bit of a break here
and
make some announcements, and we'll be right back. You're listening to RexSykes.com, Rex Sykes Movie Beat. And we appreciate all of your support. I'm going to tell you who the upcoming guests are, and also tell you that you can follow us, on Twitter at Rex Sykes Movie BT. But you can also join our fan page, Rex Sykes Movie Beat Friends on Facebook, or the Rex Sykes Movie Beat Group on Facebook as well. But upcoming, Nick Mancuso sadly has had to reschedule. He won't be here as the next interview, as did Sam Auster, director. But Sam, I know, is coming back shortly. Nick, we've got another date scheduled as well, but Nick and I will be talking about when he can return to the show. Patrick Giraldi is a post-production sound supervisor, re-recording mixer. He's coming up. Terry Green, the screenwriter and director of Heaven's Fall and the recent movie No God, No Masters, which is in post. And Almost Salinas will be coming back. Danielle Eskenazi is a casting director who's been here. She will be back. Uwe Boll, producer and director, will be coming up then after him. And John Colley, the visual effects supervisor of District 9 and Twilight Eclipse and a host of other movies. We then have Sarah Neen Bruce, who's a producer-director. Larry Thomas is the soup Nazi from Seinfeld. Bob Hercules, a documentary film director and producer. And Juliet Landau, who you may remember as Drusilla on Buffy and Angel, has directed Gary Oldman's latest music video, Behind the Scenes. And so just many, many, many more. But that'll take us into the first week of April, or part of the first week of April. So be sure to stay tuned to Rex Sykes' Movie Beat. Go back and listen to all the fantastic interviews in the archives, and stay tuned for those coming up. I'm having a fascinating conversation with Rocky Lang here today. And I appreciate it so much, Rocky, that you're here. I know we've got a lot to talk about, and but you also, you said you just, was it to Lifetime you sold a screenplay?
To Lifetime, yes. I found a because I have daughters and I've always been sort of interested in girls' issues, I was appalled and also fascinated about a story that appeared in the news a while ago, which I then found out, which was not the only such story. And it was a story out of Florida of a young girl who had been beaten up by other girls while it was being photographed and put on YouTube. And so I started to do some research on girl fighting in schools, and I was found out that girl violence had actually increased quite a bit more than boy violence in schools across the social economic line. It really didn't matter whether or not it was at a prep school in New England or if it was in a public school in Detroit. And it was sort of shocking, and it was also sort of shocking to me about how much of this was put on the internet, with sites actually called Fightzilla online. And so what I did is I sort of researched the story, and then I got a writer named Bonnie, a woman named Bonnie Garvin, involved with it. And Bonnie had a wonderful movie she did for Showtime a while back called Attica with Alan Alda, which she wrote and produced. And I asked Bonnie if she wanted to go along the road with me on this and do the research and let's try to break a story out of it. And then I partnered with my two very good friends, Linda Berman and David Craig of Media Nation. And so we got together on this and brought it into Lifetime television. And they liked the idea, and they wanted us to then actually secure the rights, which is always something that you need to do with true stories. So we were able to get the rights. Gloria Allred represented the people, so we dealt with Gloria and made a deal with her, and she came on board with our production team. And ultimately, we made the deal with Lifetime. But the movie was sold not only by the pitch of the story, but by the fact that I was able, with Scott, from Books to Film, to actually get footage of girl fighting and put it together with text and sort of data support about violence to be able to show to Lifetime that this was just not an isolated incident. This was something that was sort of proliferating at a level that was uncomfortable. And that therefore was worthy from Lifetime's needs to have social content to their material. So in that sense, our sizzle reel basically dropped the jaws of the executives. And so then it was followed by the narrative pitch by Bonnie. And that is the way that I have been approaching a lot of projects, because I think in movie business today, as well as in life itself, is that people have short attention spans.
And, absolutely.
And so if you can capture their imagination visually, then you have a better chance of getting them to understand the concept of the text as you pitch it. And the text not in the written form, but basically when you tell the story. And I've been very successful with doing that with sizzle reels. In fact, I have another sizzle reel right now. We're in negotiations on a reality show that was also based on the sizzle reel, which I probably shouldn't get into too much. But in any event, they've been very successful to me. I've set up features with them, big features. I've set up television. I've set up reality. And now authors are using the same tool in order to help their careers, which I enjoy helping other people.
Well, I ought to put you in touch with my sister, who wrote a book called Eight Bald Chicks. Her name is Jenny Sykes. She authored a book which was about girl gangs in L.A. and in Texas and in the Milwaukee area. And it was their story. And the thing that I found compelling about her book, which I didn't know, I mean, she went out and researched this, spent a lot of time with girl gang members, was just how widespread and how much violence occurred among the girls inside gangs. And, of course, all the movies typically are about boys.
Right.
About the men in the gangs, not about the girls. But she wrote this book, and they do have a screenplay and a TV series.
Well, please put her in touch with me. It's interesting you go that way, because the last Lifetime movie I did last year, The Racing for Time with Charles Dutton, that was also a girls' movie that took place in a women's prison that was based on a true story. So it seems like, I go in these cycles, interestingly
yeah.
enough, where
yeah.
I did The Titanic and I did White Squall in the same year. And I've never really been so much of a boatsman, sunk two boats in a year. And then the last 2 years I've been doing, sort of young girls in Jeopardy movies,
right.
Social Jeopardy movies. So that's
cool.
Project. Yeah.
Cool. I also want to say that Bonnie Garvin has been a guest on Movie Beat. She was an excellent guest, and listeners, you know, can go into the archives or go to iTunes and look up screenwriter and coach Bonnie Garvin is the name of the show. Rex Sykes, Movie Beat, chats with screenwriter and coach Bonnie Garvin. So
she's great. Yeah, Bonnie's got a company called From Idea to Script, and she's been which is from ideatascript.com, I believe it is, but to tell my friend. But Bonnie's, she's a wonderful teacher as well as a writer. She's at SC, and she can really help people develop their screenplay ideas, and she's got a really cool method. So I support her.
Well,
that's
fantastic. So, before we get into, because I want to talk with you about producing and directing as well, but you've authored 3 other books.
Right.
Right? I mean, so you want to share a little bit with each of these?
Sure. It sort of came out of left field in a weird way. I mean, I'd always been interested in books, for movies. I mean, if you'll actually even look at the last 2 years, I mean, not this current season, but last year, there are 4 of the 5 nominees for Best Picture were books. So there's always been this sort of synergy between books and movies that, you know, as well as just writing books. But what happened is that I was approached several years ago by another writer, Pablo Fenves, and he had wanted to do a book called Son of Hollywood, and he wanted me to be the guy who sort of like talked about the transition of the Hollywood of my father to the Hollywood of today. And I was sort of mildly interested in it, but not really interested in it, because I was sort of doing my own thing. And he had a deal at that time with Judith Reagan at HarperCollins and Reagan Books. And so I met with Judith, and Judith wanted me to sort of do a kiss-and-tell book. And I was not interested in that, first of all. I'm not a kiss-and-tell type of guy. And the other thing is my career is far too young for me to be kissing and telling stories about people I need to be working with. But what I did do is I pitched her an idea called How I Broke Into Hollywood. And what that really book was about was not how I personally broke into Hollywood, but how people broke into Hollywood. And what I wanted to do was a book that not only talked about the likes of bigger names like Sidney Pollack, who appeared in the book, but also people who are editors or cinematographers or costume designers or whatever, how people broke in. And I felt that that was a really interesting story. So Judith bought that book, and I co-wrote that with Pablo. And it's a really empowering book for anybody who wants to really do anything, because what ultimately the message is in all the stories that are told in the book is that it's about passion. It's about perseverance. It's about not taking no for an answer. And we have some wonderful, wonderful stories in that book that go from people like, you know, Jay Cantor, who was Marlon Brando's first agent, you know, to contemporary people today, like David Frankel or Todd Robinson, you know, who are my friends. That became sort of got me the writing bug. And so then the second book came out of that is because I was originally the mother of my children is a doctor. And when we were married years ago, she would have doctors and her students, her medical students, come to the house for dinner, and I would constantly hear these crazy, crazy stories from the medical world. And I kept logs of these because I felt that the stories were so crazy that I would eventually use them in some sort of narrative in books. And so at the end of the day, after years of this, I had files and files of crazy medical stories, and that ultimately came a book that I sold called Confessions of Emergency Room Doctors, which hopefully will be a reality show called The Bizarre ER, which we are out there pitching right now. So that was a really fun book. And then and the other books that I've done have been diabetes-related books for children, because my daughter, Nikki, the singer, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 10. And so I'm on the board of the American Diabetes Association, and I'm an advocate, and I've written children's books and done all sorts of things for kids who are living with diabetes. And so those are the books leading up to The Big Nasty. And then I have another book, which will be published later in the year, called The Low Post. We don't have a pub date on that, but that should come out probably at the end of the year. So that's the book world.
Well, I wouldn't guess normally ask this question, but where do you find time to do it all?
Well, you know, it's just doing. It's really doing. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I just find time to do it. The other project, I mean, just speaking of time, along with diabetes, which I just want to mention real quickly, is that I got a nonprofit called the Joe Toucan Diabetes Project, and that will be launched later this year. And that is also came out of a children's book. And what the Joe Toucan Diabetes Project is, and we also have a sizzle reel for the Joe Toucan Diabetes Project. So I'm integrating all these things. What basically the Joe Toucan Diabetes Project is I created a doll for newly diagnosed children in the hospital setting, because the first day of diagnosis for children with diabetes is horrible. They're getting shots and needle sticks and blood tests, and so basically the doll becomes a bridge where we say the healthcare team and the parents will take care of you, and you will take care of the doll. And the doll comes with miniature diabetes equipment, and it's been an amazing journey for me. And we have Billie Jean King on our board, and Adam Morrison of the Lakers, and we have those are our name people, and we have a wonderful medical team behind us as well. So it's a cool project. But it just in regard to what we do is I sort of integrate, the book's the film, we did our sizzle, and the Joe Toucan Diabetes Project came from a book, and, so I bring my world to my projects, which gets back to your question as, am I solitary? There's so much activity happening around me all the time that I'm not really ever feeling alone.
Apparently not. And to kind of summarize, I mean, in the sense that, or to extrapolate, I guess the advice that I get from example is, if you want to make things happen, you just do it as you demonstrate. And you got a lot of different plates that you're holding up in the air, but you're working each of them and successfully negotiating them and surrounding yourself with great people. So, for listeners out there, I think, success leaves clues, and in listening to you talk, I think we get clues as to, what we can begin to do to further ourselves or advance our own careers. And I sure appreciate that, Rocky. That's awesome.
It's just, it's like Todd said over the weekend, keep shooting. He says keep shooting, and it's really the same thing as one foot in front of the other. I mean, the business is brutal business. It beats you down every day. And part of what I did is I decided, and it's advice to your listeners who, are feeling despondent at times at the length in which it takes to make progress, is that I decided at some point that, I had a right to work, and that my life should not be dependent upon a studio executive or an agent or somebody taking 3 months to get back to me on a project or deciding whether or not that my project was funny enough or had enough action or fit the right genre or whatnot. I could only do what I could do. And what that meant is I could put my best effort out on that project. But once that project was out, I wasn't going to wait. I'm on to the next thing. So it protects you from the hurt of rejection, because you always have something else, another train on the track. And so as opposed to like putting all your effort into one screenplay and then waiting and waiting and waiting for someone to buy it, while you're waiting, get on to the next screenplay. Get on to the next idea that you want. Keep working. So, if it does, if you get rejected on that first screenplay, you're on to the next project. And, and your heart is down to the next project. And so, and the thing about Hollywood is things come around again. So if you get passed on the first time, for sure, every executive in town who's at a job today will be fired in 5 years. without question, they will either be fired or they will quit or they will burn out, and there will be a whole new crop of people in. So you have a whole new chance to go resubmit your material, change the title, change your name. There's all sorts of ways around it, and all you need is one person to say yes.
Very true.
And the Lifetime movie Racing for Time was the last stop. We pitched that at about 15 places, and the last stop was Lifetime. And they bought it. That's all we needed.
That is stellar advice. And I'm going to say this: we've got about 13 minutes left, and we're not going to be able to get into and do justice to producing or directing things that the other topics I wanted to. So I'm going to just you know, throw it out there for our listeners now that you will come back and we can talk at another time, and we'll let them know when that will be. That
great,
the,
sure, great. Love to.
All right. Well, what I do want to ask, and we can maybe round this out with some stuff from your background. Let's dispel a few things. I mean, you grew up in Hollywood. You your father was a producer, and you and I had conversed or emailed about this a little bit. I knew your dad kind of casually, and James Goldstone, who worked for your dad, and I knew well actually for a while. Worked on a picture with him. Well, let's talk a little bit about maybe old Hollywood. But you know, people always think, well, okay, yeah, but you grew up in Hollywood, or you came from a Hollywood family, so obviously you're well connected, and that makes all the difference in the world. That can work for you or against you in many cases. So can we address that?
Yeah,
so
sure. Well, I think that, you know, my dad used to say, you know, when nepotism came up as a subject, you know, he said his attitude was essentially, look, you're a shoemaker, your kid learns about shoemaking. And, you know, that's why you have, you know, father and son automobile dealerships and families working together in all sorts of business. Why should it be any different in the movie business? Well, the reason why the perception is it's different in the movie business is because the movie business is so glamorous, and everybody sees it all the time. And so they see an unfairness when you see a son following his father's footsteps. I think for me, there's no question that the benefits of me being Jennings Lang's son helped me early in my career. There's no question about it. I also have to say that I loved my dad to no end. I admired him. He was my hero. You know, his wings, his arms were broad and protective of me, and I wanted to be in the world that he was in. And it wasn't just the movie business. I mean, because of his love of sports and his love of art, became my love of sports and my love of art. So you know, that was my dad, and so I wanted very much to be a director, a film director. He was a film producer. He was a showman and an executive at Universal, and so I sort of set my goals very early on to be a film director. And ultimately, you know, my idea, very early in my career as a director, I saw the commercial side of filmmaking is where I wanted to go. And when I was at the American Film Institute, I sort of stuck out like a sore thumb because I wanted to do action films, and I was with a lot of, you know, sort of artsy-fartsy, you know, filmmakers who wanted to shoot underneath tables through flower vases and distort faces of people and, you know, doing the whole sort of art thing. So I didn't really fit into well into that world. But I really wanted to go that way. And so when you talk about how did I get into that world, the benefit was that my dad made a movie called Nuncio in New York City in 1977. And that was the summer of Sam. It was the summer that the Yankees and the Dodgers were both in independent pennant races. It was the summer of the Con Ed blackout. It was the summer of Saturday Night Fever. It was an amazing summer, and I was, I think, a 19-year-old kid who was put in a camera warehouse to charge batteries in New York while my dad made this movie. And what I did is I was able to, because I started the ground up. My dad insisted that, you know, I knew lenses. I knew if I wanted to be a director, I needed to know everything, sweep the floors, do, you know, whatever I needed to do to you know, sort of learn it from the ground up. So I was able to convince the camera company's owner, a guy named Dick DeBona, who owned General Camera, which was the East Coast distributor of Panavision at the time, to let me have an Aeroflex. And in my off time, I would go onto my dad's set, and I would shoot footage, which became what was a featurette, which in a certain strange way is a sort of precursor to the sizzle reels, which I didn't know, and we're talking 1977. And that movie that I made was called Hollywood Came to Brooklyn. And it was a pretty nice little documentary, and what it really did is it focused on how these people in Borough Park in Brooklyn and what happened to their lives when Hollywood production came to them. So the benefit of me being Jennings Lang's son and working in that camera rental house gave me access to making that movie. That movie ultimately got me into the American Film Institute. And it got me some notoriety because it won an award I was a pretty good documentarian. And then that documentary later ultimately got me the job with Sidney Pollack, who although had worked for my father on a TV show at Universal in the 60s called Shotgun Slade, they were not really that friend. They had sort of lost touch with each other, but I was friends with a guy named Eric Roth, who ultimately wound up doing Forrest Gump. Eric was a young writer who was, someone who my dad knew. So through my dad, I knew Eric, but Eric knew Sidney. Sidney introduced me to me. I showed Sidney my film When Hollywood Came to Brooklyn. He hired me to do Tootsie, and I did Tootsie, which won all these awards and ultimately got me my first directing shows. So what you're the aunt on Remington Steele. So what you see is that by being Jennings Lang's son, I was provided access. But the work that I did had to stand on its own because no one would give me millions of dollars to go direct television or hundreds of thousands of dollars to do these, you know, expensive documentaries unless the work was valid and yeah. and good. And so the door was open for me, but I took advantage of the opportunity. My dad then ultimately, unfortunately, had a stroke, a very severe stroke, probably about 1984. And it was prior to me directing features. So all of the features that I directed and all of the movies that I produced were after he was debilitated. I believe that the successes and failures of my career are of my own making, but that I would not have ever gotten into the business or probably wouldn't have gotten into the business if I didn't love my dad so much and want to be like him, wanted my name to be like his name, because my real name is Jennings Rockwell Lang. Everybody calls me Rocky, but I wanted that name change when I was young because I wanted to be my dad's boy. Uh-huh. And so I love my dad. I love my dad's world. I wanted to be in my dad's world, you know, just probably like somebody else loved their dad and they wanted to be a baseball player, you know, Barry Bonds and Bobby Bonds. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it follows naturally when families are close.
I think that's beautiful the way you shared that. I really do. I think that people have misconceptions of nepotism, misconceptions of Hollywood, misconceptions of all sorts of things. I spent my teenage years in Hollywood and had plenty of friends who were friends of sons and daughters of very famous people, and they couldn't, sometimes they could get access to things because of their parents' notoriety, and other times it didn't assist them in getting, you know, or that they were compared, there was a standard of comparison of, okay, you're the kid of so-and-so, well, you know, what can you do, or what have you done, you know, that kind of. I think that you share that with us really, really well, and it's beautiful, and your love for your father, you know, definitely comes through, and I think that's fantastic. You were at the Grapes Oak Mansion then. I mean, you were at the old AFI in Doheny.
That's right.
I love that place. And, you know,
I nearly burned it down, too. This is another story.
Well, have you sure? What years were you there? I mean, I did a lot of the SAG.
I was 79.
Oh yeah,
80.
Sure.
Yeah,
a lot of this. I love that place. I was just back there last year. Took all sorts of video of it and brought it home. And my computer crashed and ate all of my video. And I've got to come back out and go back out and visit. But
yeah, it was fun.
It
was fun. I got to tell you, this was really great because this is like one of the few things I remember of that experience. Is Tony Villani, who was the director of the program and head of the director's program, which I was a member of. He said on the first day of film school, and he said, the only thing that you will get out of film school is when it's over, you will be older.
That's great.
So, anyway, I thought that was a great way to start film school.
Great way. You know, we've got about 4 minutes left,
okay.
And I had promised you a better countdown than that. But
that's all right.
We've got about 4 minutes left. But that place was great. I got to sit with Uta Hagen and Henry Fonda, and I mean, just and work on projects up there that, you know, is continued today over on Western Avenue. But I mean, wow. I mean, I love that place. I love the grounds, and it would. I think I just about do pay whatever it took to get back inside that building again sometime for an event, because I you know, hanging in those halls and that place.
It was a great time. I was so young. I was the youngest director admitted. I think only 21 years old or something when I was admitted into the program, and I didn't really expect to get into the program, but I'd done this film when I was 19, the Hollywood Comes to Brooklyn film, and you know, I got in, and there are all these older filmmakers who are, you know, because it's a math, sort of a master's program and a graduate program, and they were, you know, 27 to 50 years old. And here I was, this 21-year-old, you know, sort of kid, and I didn't have much in common with anybody. And then, you know, directing, you know, some of these people and working with them who were so much older than I was. I mean, it was difficult. It was difficult. I'll tell you one thing that I learned from it, which was really interesting, is when we did our films, we presented the films to the class. And it wasn't just, you didn't just present it to the director's class, the producing and the actor's class and all of that. And you'd run it, and they'd make you sit on this couch. And you couldn't say a word. You basically had to hear, like, you know, 70 people, you know, rip your film to shreds. And since it was competitive, there was a lot of ripping to shreds. And you could never defend anything. And the whole point of it was, is that once you put the work out in the world, you know, there's really nothing you can do about it. The work has to stand on its own, one way or the other. I mean, you can't call every critic, and you can't call everybody and, you know, sort of defend your work and say, well, I didn't have enough money, and, you know, the sun went down and the lights broke and, you know, all of that. And sort of, you know, you just had to do that. And it was a really sort of good exercise. At the time, it was really uncomfortable for me, but, and for everybody, because everybody got ripped, but it was a good message. And then, of course, my dad said to me, you know, critics are people who come down from the mountain after the battle is over and shoot the dead. And that sort of helped me, too, as I got my first few bad reviews.
Well, yeah, but right there, I mean, that's a mouthful, because, I mean, we tend to have just kind of a family-friendly screening thing that happens on, you know, Wednesday nights, where people get together and show some of their recent works and things. And I mean, I understand everybody wants to defend their work, but to not defend it, I mean, that really takes courage. And to sit there and have people say what they would say if it's out in the world, it sounds like a fantastic exercise. And sometimes the best exercises are not the most comfortable ones, or where the stretch. You know, if you didn't have to stretch, if it was comfortable, we would never change. You know, I
mean, right?
Yeah. No, that's excellent. But that place, apart from being, you know, I think a great film school for people to be in and to experience, also brought in, I mean, I remember having, you know, like weekend events and doing weird things like moving pianos with, you know, Bud Cort or Edith Head. I mean, you know, he was a famous costume designer all those years, and spending time, you know, just sitting and chatting to Edith Head. I mean,
I know exactly what you're saying. It was a great place. You'd, like, walk down the halls and you would see these famous people coming in and out, and they were very supportive of the students. And you could just be sitting there, and there would be Henry Fonda, and, you know, he'd be there for some meeting with Gene Furstenberg or someone, and, you know, he'd say, what are you working on? And you'd tell him the story, and, you know, that good luck, you know, move on. And they had these great screenings all the time. It was fun. I had a good time.
Well, we're going to come back with you. You and I will chat. We'll figure out a date that you can come back. We'll let the listeners know all about it. We'll go up on the website, for the return date. But RockyLang.com, give out some of the other websites, because we get the...
Well, check out my book. Definitely check out my book at Amazon or cablepublishing.com. And I'm at RockyLang.com. You can learn all about me and all of my projects, Joe Toucan, Books to Film. All of that's through RockyLang.com. Or if you want to check out the sizzle reels, www.bookstofilm.tv. And so, otherwise, thank you so much for having me on the show, and to your listeners, thanks for listening.
Oh, you've been fabulous. We certainly have enjoyed it. I look forward to the return. Have a fabulous day. Thanks for sharing. We'll come back. We'll talk about producing and movies. Maybe we'll reminisce a little bit more, but we really want to get into more of the body of your work and what directing and producing. But thanks so much. Best of success with the book and all of the projects, Rocky. Have a great, great day.
Thank you.
All right. I want to thank my guest again, Mr. Rocky Lang, for being on the show today and for sharing with you and with me. And keep in mind, we've got many more exciting guests coming up in the near future, so be sure to stay tuned. And please keep sharing this website and these interviews with all of your friends and your contacts. You know, go ahead, retweet about it, put it on your Facebook. Also, if you like the interview today, go ahead and shout it out. I mean, that's the kind of thing that helps my guest and helps get the word out to the others out there who may or may not even know about the show yet. Become a member of the Rex Sykes Movie Beat Facebook group by clicking on the group link at my profile page, or join the fan page, Rex Sykes Movie Beat Friends. But most of all, people, that's it. Everybody have a fabulous day. Make your movies and complete your projects. And until we meet the next time, which is coming up soon, that's a wrap.